Blog Talk Radio.
Money isn't everything, but it keeps the kids in touch.
You're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show with financial expert Douglas Goldstein. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, or specific financial advice. If you require such advice, contact a competent professional advisor. Before making any investment decisions based on what you heard during the show, please review the complete disclaimer located at www.goldsteinongeld.com. And now, here's your host, Money Maven, Doug Goldstein.
Good Money Monday. I'm Doug Goldstein. Thanks so much for joining me today. I've got a fabulous set of guests, but before I introduce them, let me just tell you about a conversation I had, which I think many of you will find very interesting, and maybe it's even happened to you. I've gotten a number of calls recently from clients or potential clients who told me that they had been trading in their Israeli bank account U.S. stocks and exchange-traded funds, often called ETFs and mutual funds, and they said the bank told them they will no longer accept their business and they have to move out. Before we go into the details of why that is, let me just tell you that there is a solution. So if this is happening to you, don't worry. I'm going to tell you how to deal with it in just a minute. The reason this is happening is because the United States passed a law called that's referred to as FATCA. It basically means that all foreign institutions, all foreign banking and brokerage and insurance institutions, are required to report to the IRS about their American clients. So, for example, if you are an American and you live in Israel and you have an Israeli bank account and in that account you have investments, your bank, that Israeli bank, is going to have to file a report with the IRS letting them know about you. So this is a huge hassle. Why? Because A, it's a hassle, and B, if the bank doesn't report, the IRS is going to fine them. They're going to withhold. The IRS has the ability, because these banks do a huge amount of business in the United States, they'll be able to hold back money. So the banks don't want that risk, and therefore they don't want you as a client. We can talk about the politics of this, which quite frankly I think is a little bit crazy, that what's happening is that the United States, in its excitement to try and collect tax from people who were probably paying tax anyway, they've created these onerous rules that have really hurt Americans and it's made it very difficult for Americans to live a normal life when they are internationally oriented. But there is a solution, and I'll tell you about that in just a minute. Now let's hear from CPA Ron Zalbin with a tax tip on the Goldstein on Geld Show.
Hi, I'm Ron Zalbin, a U.S. and Israeli CPA and a partner with the firm of Abu Lafi, Avital & Sharansky, with offices in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. In today's segment, I'd like to share with you a few questions I received as a result of last time's podcast regarding covered sales and non-covered sales. The first question is, how does the brokerage figure what my cost is for a covered sale? I assume this means that you not sell your entire lot. Let's say you bought two lots of stock. Let's say you bought 100 shares of IBM and then another 150 shares of IBM, and you only sold 75 shares of IBM. With your brokerage firm, you should have made an election of how the cost will be figured. It could be in last in, first out. It could be first in, first out. So it could be the 100 shares or from the 150 shares. Or it could be from specific identification where you choose specific lots. So before you sell, you must check with your financial planner to make sure the relevant election that you have elected, because it may have a huge impact on your tax situation depending on what lot you choose for the cost and ultimately what gain you will recognize on your tax return. The second question is, what happens if I disagree with the cost that was provided for a covered sale? There is a column on the Form 8949 where you can adjust the gain or loss depending on circumstances. It's in the F and G column of the Form 8949, and in the F column, you have to provide a reason why you are adjusting the cost basis. The third question I received was, if I have a non-covered sale, does that mean I do not have to report the sale on my tax return to the IRS? Far from the case. You must report the sale. It just means that the IRS is not getting the information on the original cost from the brokerage. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to email me at ron@abulafia.co.il.
thanks so much, CPA Ron Zalbin, for today's Goldstein on Gelt Tax Tip. I started by telling you about a fellow who had been kicked out of his bank in Israel, not for doing anything particularly wrong, but just because he wanted to trade in U.S. securities. He wanted to buy some stocks in America, and he wanted to buy some ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And the bank said to him, we will no longer take your business. It's time to move on. It's lucky he came to us because we were able to help him out to open a U.S. brokerage firm, a brokerage account. So let me tell you, I actually wrote an article, and I'm speaking about this topic at the AACI in Jerusalem on the 25th of March. So you're all welcome to come and see it there. If you have any questions, contact the office. In fact, just call the producer, Yoram Ohana. Yoram produces the Goldstein on Gelt show. You call him at the office at 02-624-2788. He can give you all of the details for that seminar. The topic that I'll be talking about is how people who live outside the United States are able to open a U.S. brokerage account. Let me just give you a few pointers. The first one is simply realizing that although there are some companies that won't work with U.S. expatriates, U.S. expats, people who have left the United States, there are many that will. This is, in fact, a niche market. It's the business that I'm in. I'm often called a cross-border financial advisor because I deal with people who are cross-border. They live in one country and they want to open an account in another country, and the area that I specialize in is U.S. brokerage accounts. So don't give up. There's no problem. You just have to find a company that specializes in dealing with people outside the United States. Now, when you do that, you need to realize there are a few factors. One of them is you have to be prepared to clearly identify yourself. One of the things that we do when we open an account is we want to make sure that the person coming to us is legitimate, is a legitimate person, is not trying to do any shenanigans. We're very careful about not opening accounts where people might want to do money laundering or anything illegal. We stay far away from that. And one of the ways we do that is we want to look at your passport. We want to know that you live where you say you live. So we're very careful to make sure that people are who they say they are. And along with that, we want to be very clear about your citizenship. So you're going to have to sign the proper form, whether it's a W-9 form that says you are a U.S. citizen or a W-8 form that says you're not a U.S. citizen. Either one is fine. We can open accounts for either type of person, and we do it all the time. But we need to make sure we're doing it the right way. So those are two main points. One of them is the ID has to be crystal clear, no questions, and we need to make sure that we open the account in the right format for whether you are a U.S. or a non-U.S. person. All right, stay tuned. In just a minute, I'll be bringing on my first guest. Scott Fox wrote a book called Click Millionaires. He also teaches people about how to become wealthy, in fact, how to run businesses online. For a lot of people who have a day job or maybe just have a business idea and that they'd like to explore, I think you'll really enjoy the interview talking to Scott. And then in the second half of the show, bringing on a fantastic fellow, Nir Eyal. He wrote a book called Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. He speaks a lot about using neuroscience to influence human behavior. That'll be in part two, and we'll talk to him about habit building and how to improve our financial mindset so we can improve our financial situation. I'm your host, Doug Goldstein. Thanks for joining me on the Goldstein on Gelt show. Stay tuned for Scott Fox.
Doug Goldstein, Mondays at 7 p.m.
Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have on the Goldstein on Gelt show Scott Fox, who's the founder of the popular lifestyle entrepreneur coaching community called ClickMillionaires.com, and he wrote a book called Click Millionaires, Work Less, Live More with an Internet Lifestyle Business You Love. Now, a lot of people are very cynical about the Internet, and they kind of feel that it's ubiquitous and that it's changing the way people think and do things, and they say it kind of with a pejorative tone. But, Scott, I think you found a way to really make it a fantastic vehicle for people to change their lives. What is being a lifestyle entrepreneur all about?
Hey, Doug. Well, thanks for asking. I think a lifestyle business represents the real opportunity for everybody listening today that's just different than the way we were raised. Lifestyle businesses are not what's taught in business schools. They're not what you see covered in the business pages. They're not what you see going public. These are businesses that entrepreneurs build to support their own goals and independent creativity, meaning they prioritize their lifestyle even before the money. Now, it's still a business, so you have to make enough money to support your lifestyle. But the idea is that business can serve your own goals and who you want to be when you grow up, as they say, rather than constantly grabbing for more capital, more growth, more employees, and an exit strategy. This is an idea that you can live your life and a business can be built to support that.
So let's clarify a little bit more, because a lot of people who are old-fashioned entrepreneurs, or they're practitioners, they may be doctors or lawyers, didn't they kind of live their own life and have their own goals?
Well, perhaps they did. You know, that's a good in-between case, like an attorney or a CPA or an accountant or a doctor. That's someone who's gone to school for a long time and probably is more in control of their own career destiny than the average person, right? So that's a good in-between. I'm really talking about the extremes on either side, though. Most people work for a big company, or at least a small company. They work for the man. You know, they show up at a certain hour, dress a certain way, do a certain thing every day. They go home, they get a paycheck. And they're kind of on that hamster wheel, right? Tread, 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 tread. And they hope to make enough money to eventually retire and stop working. The doctors and lawyers who have the credentials, they can kind of be in between as their own corporations often. But the other side is where I am, where I'd like to encourage the 9-to-5 people, or these days it's more often like 8-to-8, the 8-to-8 people to come over to where I am, which is, hey, you can build a business where you can get up when you want, you can wear what you want, you can have lunch where you want, you can hang out with people you want, and you don't have to work with people you don't want to work with, and you don't have to do stuff you don't have to do. Now, I'm not saying this is easy or quick, but that's why, as you mentioned, I've written 3 books about this stuff to help people through it.
All right, so let's focus on the type of person who does it, because I consider myself a kind of entrepreneurial guy. I started my first business when I was 15. I had an entertainment agency, and fast forward many years, and I run a number of companies. My biggest company is a financial planning firm, and I'm constantly thinking of new ideas. I feel like I have sort of an entrepreneurial spirit. That, you know, I see something and I imagine how it could be improved, and I'm like sort of geeky in this way. I'll sometimes sit down and write down a business plan, not that I'm going to do it, but just I kind of want to get everything in one place. And yet I find when I talk about some of these ideas with other people, I see their eyes rolling back in their head. You know, it just doesn't sit with them. Are there people who are entrepreneurial and people who just aren't?
I think you're exactly right, and I have the same instincts that you do. I have bunches of business plans and ideas all the time, and I actually currently run enough that I've lost count, somewhere between a dozen and 20 different websites that are all plinking in different little amounts of money, and none of these are huge Facebook, you know, IPO sort of businesses. These are little lifestyle businesses that reflect individual niche interests of my own, and this is what I talk about in the Click Millionaires book, and in our we have a free forum at clickmillionaires.com that you mentioned where we coach people how to figure this out. So yeah, Doug, I think some people are entrepreneurial minded, and other people, they're happy to work for somebody else and do that stuff. I have nothing against those folks. I'm just saying from personal experience, and you'll get my story if you read the books and so forth, I found that wasn't for me, and I tried really hard. I had a bunch of different jobs over 15 or 20 years in different industries, and I went back to grad school, and I tried a bunch of different ways, and I just was unhappy every time, even though I did really well and made a lot of money. There are some people just wired a little differently, and literally me and you and hopefully others listening, we have this drive to build little things. And the internet, you can do that. You can put up a website and try something very inexpensively compared to what it used to cost to build a business, a real business cost lots of money and lots of time. It would still take some time to build a business online, but the infrastructure is really cheap compared to the old days of, you know, getting a storefront or an office and parking spaces and fax machines and desks and insurance and, you know, and all that stuff, right? You don't need all the stuff anymore. So
you might still need insurance. That depending on what you're selling. Let's not pass by that one.
Fair enough.
We're talking with Scott Fox, who is an expert in lifestyle design, and he's written a number of books on it. I guess the most recent one is called Click Millionaires. Scott, I want to dig into this even further, because I think we're still talking a little bit too high up. I want to drill down maybe to an example of either something you've done, or maybe even better is, you know, a success story of someone who you've coached to leave the 8-to-8 job, develop an idea that, you know, he really liked and turned it into something. Can you tell us something like that?
Sure, I'm happy to. And there's a lot more of these in the books and in my podcasts and my YouTube videos. I'm all across the web if anybody's interested in following up. There are examples. But a couple quick ones in this context. Well, I really like the example that's in the book about Rob, who was a personal trainer, which is a good job. You know, he enjoyed that, very physical young guy. But you know what he really liked to do? He liked to fly model airplanes. Fast forward, he figures out that he can put videos on YouTube of model airplanes. He's got the biggest remote-controlled airplane channel on YouTube. He's making real money. He doesn't do physical personal training anymore. He does what he wants. He flies model airplanes, puts videos on YouTube, right? Or another one, Al. Al was a journalist who went to a traditional print publication, and it turned out that they were downsizing, as all print publications are. You know, that's happening everywhere, right? And he figured out the internet. Hey, this is, you know, a cheaper way to publish. So he took the same industry that he covered as a print journalist, turned it into an online newsletter. This is an example in the book, too. And that's a real nice business for him now. It's more of a business-to-business, where the first example is business-to-consumer. Business-to-business offers lots of opportunities as well. So, and I've got a bunch of these. I write my books, believe it or not, for my mother. My mother's in her 70s, and she's my star pupil. If you read my books, there are a bunch of businesses. We won't go into it now, but a bunch of businesses built around her interests. And if she can do it, anybody can do it.
No kidding. That's me. I'm going to tell you something funny, because if we're talking about our mothers. My mother, I told you I'm in the financial planning world. I started a little over 20 years. And at that time, I was partners with my mother, who was a vice president for a major brokerage firm. And she'd been there for 17 years. And I've written a number of books as well, and about investing. And my number one editor is my mother, because before she had been a financial person, she had been an editor with Scholastic. So she brought all the skills together. But it's funny how, I guess, young middle-aged guys like us are always thinking about our moms.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, well, it's another great point, because you were asking about lifestyle businesses. One of the biggest benefits about lifestyle businesses, again, never talked about in business school, right? You can work with your family if you want to, right? Sure. My mom has a internet business. My wife has an internet business. I get my brother involved. You know, this is things that we can do together. And that's a wonderful thing that the corporate approach of the 20th century really kind of lost, right? Everybody's just a cog in a cubicle, and, you know, you do something for somebody in an office miles away, right? But working with your family is a really wonderful thing.
And I think one of the other aspects, and I'll give an example of it as well, is that it's you don't have to, however, be sitting in your basement, you know, surrounded by a few computers. My daughter discovered many years ago that she had a knack for teaching Hebrew, and she just set up a website and teaches Hebrew, and it's one-on-one. She does coaching with people around the world, actually, and so she has these relationships with people. You know, she's really working with real-life people. It's true, it's over, you know, Skype video, but I think it's important to realize that you're not just closing yourself in a little internet box where you never interact with people. It's a
great point.
It's really human.
Yeah, it can be, and that's a great example. Maybe we'll put it in my next book. That's a great example.
But one of the problems that I do see people having, not only in internet businesses, because a lot of my clients try this, but in, you know, regular businesses, is at the end of the day, if you don't have a client to pay you money, you're not going to stay successful. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that's the number one thing to figure out before you invest a huge amount of your time or energy, is will someone actually pay you for whatever you're trying to sell? How do you help people deal with that?
I couldn't agree more. That's a huge insight, and I totally agree. The way I phrase that same thing, and there's a video or two of me on YouTube talking about this, is people make the mistake of focusing on supply instead of demand. So they come in and they hear all this stuff on radio shows and books and so forth. You know, do what you love and the money will follow. Well, that's important, but you really got to figure out where the money's going to come from, right? So the demand, right? You can supply all the product you want. That's not the problem we have anymore. The internet and the world is full of products, right? There's cheap stuff from China everywhere. That's not the problem. The problem is finding customer demand first. And there's 7 principles in the Click Millionaires book that describe how I and a lot of my friends and associates and clients have built lifestyle businesses. 7 principles of how to design a business, not just to make money, but to accommodate your lifestyle. And the first of those is find a need and serve it. And that's the same point you're making, I think. What problem can I solve that people are going to pay me for? And then how to
that's
put
the critical part that they're going to pay you for, right?
That's right. And then how does it overlap with something I actually want to do? Because there's lots of stuff people pay me for I don't want to do. But if there's an overlap, that's where your future is as a lifestyle business, or as I call it, a click millionaire entrepreneur.
So let me give you the cynical question, because there are a lot of guys out there who talk about making money online, and all they do is they make money online by talking about making money online. It seems to me that you're beyond that, but I just want to understand, you're not just out there selling this one idea, right? In other words, you've succeeded in doing this in other areas of the internet.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the profits from my books are given to charity. The clickmillionaires.com forum that I mentioned, it's the only forum I know of on the internet. We give half of the ad revenue back to the most active members, so it's a way to get paid as you teach yourself. The other half I need to pay the moderators and pay for the hosting and stuff. I give away as much as I can. I have, like I said, a dozen or plus other websites that make my money, and I do try to cover my costs. I honestly believe, and the reason I started writing, I'm not a writer, I'm a business guy, but I believe that Silicon Valley has a lot to teach the rest of the world, and they're not sharing the information. Right? It's probably the same reason you do this show, right? You're telling me you interview these Nobel laureates and stuff. This is important stuff that regular folks deserve a chance to hear. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm from Silicon Valley. I've done that. I've moved on and I've graduated from that. I'm trying to help other people. This is a big thing, and you could participate even without a computer science degree, without $1 million of venture capital. It's not easy. It's not quick. But there's an opportunity here that you probably are underestimating.
Right. I think that's very true. And I think if people take that as a takeaway from today's discussion and maybe even go ahead and read the Click Millionaire, they're going to find out how to do it. Scott, we're just about out of time. But in the last few seconds, just tell me, how can people follow you and follow your work?
Well, thanks for having me on, Doug. We're at clickmillionaires.com. That's my primary website. And as I said, it's a free coaching forum for people that are new to this. You can come and ask the questions you're afraid to ask in other snarky forums on the internet, right? You know, we're here to help people, and if we can, we will. And that's what it boils down to.
Right. Scott, we'll put a link to that at the show notes of today's show at goldsteinongelt.com. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Doug.
Goldstein on Gelt is not only played in Israel on Monday nights at 7 p.m., but also around the world. Pick it up in a time zone near you.
We started in the beginning of the show talking about people who live outside the United States who want to open a U.S. brokerage account, and I was explaining how we do that, but I want to leave you with this one more thought, that you need to understand what services you're getting when you work with an investment advisor or a brokerage firm that will open an account for you in the United States, because you need to know that there are really two halves. One half is the advisory services, someone who you talk to, and the second half is what we call custody and clearing. Who holds the account? Who executes the trades? These are two different services. In my office, we bring them together, so clients get the whole thing together. But if you don't need both services, you've got to find a place which will offer you either one or the other. And there are places on both sides of the equation. Anyhow, just something to think about. If you're looking for a full-service advisory and advisory service, as well as a place where they can open the account and handle the trades for you, that's one type of organization. It would be called a full-service investment advisor. Or you might have to find someone that just does trading or just does advice. So stay tuned. In part two, I'll be bringing on Nir Eyal onto the Goldstein on Gelt Show.
You're listening to Money Maven Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Gelt Show. Stay tuned for the second half of the show right after the break.